But right now we're putting the focus on education and literacy particularly. You only think about the June 1676 uprising. It began in Soweto and it spread countrywide. And it had a profound impact on the socio-political landscape in South Africa. But the events that triggered the uprising can also be traced back to policies of the apartheid government that resulted in the introduction of the Bantu Education Act in 1953. So this was the culmination of the rejection of the system, and the young people in South Africa took up the struggle for quality education, and many of them paid with their lives. Well, here we are, 42 years later, and we're now sitting with South African children scoring below international literacy benchmarks, indicating very poor reading ability. And in December 2017, I think many of us were just shocked and in despair, just dismayed by the results that came out of the PIRLS literacy study that found that 75% of South African grade 4 learners could not read for meaning in any language. This has also been the basis of many of our conversations whenever we've put the spotlight on literacy, about the kinds of things that we need to start doing in our homes so that we can foster this love of language, this love of reading, so that by the time our kids get to grade 4, that they're reading with a love for reading and also for understanding. And in a lot of ways, this is a betrayal of what the generation of 76 fought and died for. So what is the solution? What is the way forward? Is it possible to achieve literacy in our lifetime? What should a roadmap towards literacy in our lifetime look like? Well, it's the sort of problem that we can overcome through individual and collective effort. And these are also the views of my guests this afternoon. They form part of a collective that is putting together a conversation that's happening this Saturday on Youth Day at Thabajabulo, TJ, as it's also commonly known, especially for those people that come from Soweto and Pimville. So it'll be a day-long event at Thabajabulo, the senior secondary school on Potchefstroom Road. And it's not just about this conversation, but also reflecting on how us as individuals, about you as an individual, and us as a collective can add to this particular effort. So joining me now is Lucille Moleko, who is a qualified teacher who now works at the Molteno Institute for Language and Literacy, creating literacy materials to support teachers in the classroom. And she's also involved with the teacher training. And we're also joined by Sven Glittenberg, who's an English language teacher at TJ in Soweto, and this is his sixth year in the classroom. So these are young people who are invigorated in solving this particular problem. We'll take your calls in the course of this conversation about this roadmap. What should it look like? Because the frustration also comes back to the failures in the home, how we fail to nurture children, how we fail to play a role where we are leading and demonstrating what a love of reading is all about. Because if we don't comprehend the language, if we can't utilize it or even read for meaning, we will suffer in other subjects as well. Good afternoon to you, Lucille. You join us on the line. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Azania. How are you?
I'm very good. Welcome to the conversation. And we have Sven Glittenberg in studio as well. Hello, Sven.
Hi, Azania.
So we were just talking off air that you are in my backyard, my stomping ground, just off Potch Road at Thabajabulo. I've got such fond memories of like activities that used to take place at the school, like pageants and Bansola dance troops, competitions for Bansola dancers on the stage. So it is quite an important pillar within the broader Pimville community around Klipspruit.
Indeed. Mm. And those activities continue. Our school is a much loved community center used by many churches and
yes.
And now a very important beginning of a literacy movement.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, one of the most important tasks that teachers and I guess homeschool parents face in the early grades is teaching students the fundamental language skills that underlie future learning. So you teach at grade 10. So what are you finding as far as this learning is concerned, some of the deficits that you inherit by grade 10?
So I'll begin with saying that I think the problem is not in the people, the parents or the children, but in the school system, which doesn't respond to their innate abilities and their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So while, yes, perhaps some households might not be able to prepare their children to be successful in English, because English is not perhaps a language naturally spoken in that household, the school system is vastly underperforming its role in trying to bridge that gap.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the school system doesn't recognize the language abilities and skills that the children do come with. At my school, children are often very multilingual, speaking 4 or 5 languages. However, their success academically relies on purely their ability to speak and write and read English.
Mm-hmm.
And so on paper, it looks like we have a lot of quote unquote failing students. However, it's the school that has failed to recognize their skills and to help them where they don't have skills.
You're almost suggesting a complete overhaul. It would require that.
Well, yes, we are suggesting that there need to be radical changes.
Mm-hmm. Lucille, I hear you agreeing with what Svena is saying. As someone who develops material that teachers use mm-hmm. in the classroom, you concur? Mm-hmm.
I do agree with him, but I think that would be the long-term plan. I think when we look at the education system, there's many things that need to be done, and some of them are short-term, and some of them are for the long-term benefit.
Mm.
So Ben is correct in saying that we're testing learners in a language that is not their own,
mm.
and that is part of the problem in our education system. Even at foundation phase level that we are work mostly, by the time they exit grade 3, they should be, in theory, fluent in their mother tongue and then transition to English. However, that doesn't even happen. So by the time they are in grade 4 and 5 or even grade 10, when Zen teaches them, they are actually not fluent in any language
mm.
where they can write and read with understanding. And that's where the problem is.
Yeah, because reflecting on the results from polls, that the lowest performing languages were Isxhosa and Sepedi, that the learners who wrote in English and Afrikaans achieved significantly higher scores than the African languages,
yes.
Which do not differ statistically from one another. So mm-hmm. it's across various languages. As multilingual as the students may be, these challenges exist regardless whether it's English or the mother tongue.
That is right. And the reason the African languages are even performing poorer than the English and Afrikaans schools is because when you get to grade 4, 5, 6, and 7, mm. they're not taught in their home language at all. At least with English, they are taught from grade 1 up and grade 4, and they continue. Or with Afrikaans, they're Afrikaans medium school,
mm-hmm.
which teaches throughout. But what we find with African languages is that it ends in grade 3, and miraculously we're supposed to transition to a complete other language, which we started in grade 1 and 2, but we do it as a second language, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a first additional language. And so that transition is very hard, and it's very difficult,
yes.
especially when the foundation of the home language, the mother tongue, is not set in place. It becomes very difficult to learn another language.
Right. And so when you teach English as an additional language, so this would suggest that many of your students have a different first language.
Yes, at our school, the home languages that are offered are Isxhosa, Sepedi, and Sesotho,
mm-hmm.
with the majority of learners doing Isxhosa at our school.
Yeah, and this transition that Lucille speaks of, how is this bridge being this gap being bridged properly?
Well, no. You can see clearly that kids have been stunted, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
If suddenly in grade 4 they are forced to do everything, learn everything at school except for maybe one period in English, where for 3 years they haven't been getting enough English, and
mm.
they don't come from environments where English is commonly spoken that much.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's a great variety of environments that kids in a place like Soweto come from. However, it's not the main language in Soweto, and
mm-hmm.
and then if you jump them straight into English, only English, they can't make this jump adequately.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some of the suggestions that have been made was to have a more gradual release, a more gradual sharing between home language and English, so
right.
that by the time you start going to high school, then it's half-half. And were you still using the language abilities of the children in their home language as well as English
mm-hmm.
to build understanding.
Mm.
It's something I'm doing in my own classroom as well. While I'm teaching English, obviously we're discussing issues, we're discussing stories, we're discussing important things that are happening in our country. And in order to have everybody engaged in the conversation, I'm very comfortable with us mixing languages in our class, or translanguaging as it's known.
Mm.
And this makes sure that everybody can engage with the cognitive processes at hand. We can disagree, we can agree, we can build together and come up with solutions. And yes, we do try to use as much as English as possible. However, we don't neglect the other languages, and we don't neglect the ability for children to express themselves and to make their world in their own language.
Absolutely, because it's going to erode confidence, even relating to other subjects in the long term. So I'm stuck on this idea that you started with about the fact that this is the education system failing, because for so long, and I'm trying to challenge my own acceptance of that narrative, that for so long we have said that parents, for instance, aren't playing, or what is happening in the home is what is shortchanging children when they go into the learning environment. Because even from this Pearl study, they said that a quarter of learners that had parents that liked reading very much achieved the highest mean score. So it found that 24%, if they had parents who said they liked reading a lot, performed better. 63%, if the parents said they somewhat like reading, they were pretty much in the middle. And then 13%, if those parents said they don't like reading, then those were the learners who performed the worst or got the lowest scores. So I thought there was a relationship there between what we are modeling in the home and how children are picking up these skills and how they are coping with the education process.
For sure, there's definitely a relationship. In fact, it's widely known that the greatest indicator of academic success in school is a family's socioeconomic background.
Mm.
However, I'd just like to say that it's not, you know, we can't, the narrative of putting the blame on the home, that's mm-hmm. somehow suggesting that it is some sort of personal fault of those people that their children are not succeeding at school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's similar to saying it's poor people's fault that they are poor.
Yes.
And yes. I think that's the narrative that we want to get. Of course, the home plays a huge role, and ergo, the socioeconomic inequality in South Africa is a major problem. That mm. I mean, some people, the dream is that education can be the thing that can solve all our problems. And
yeah.
I don't want to get into a debate where the economists have actually, from their research, found that this is in fact the case. But it's definitely not the one thing that's going to solve all of our problems in South Africa, especially the inequality problem. In fact, it is just one part of solving the inequality problem.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want us to take a break now, and when we come back, we will look at what's intended, the kind of collective engagement that's intended for Youth Day, as a reflection on education, the quality of education, and the heavy price that so many have had to pay in order to guarantee or to agitate and demand a better education, particularly for the black child.
Azania Mosaka on 702.
Wow. I wish we could extend this conversation, because it is just making sure that we are coming at this literacy problem from a very open perspective, which is what this Saturday's dialogue is all about. I'm joined by Sven Glittenberg, who is an educator at TJ at Tabajabula. He's been teaching for 6 years. We've been in the classroom for 6 years, as well as Lucille Muleko, who is a qualified teacher who now works at Molteno Institute for Language and Literacy, creating literacy materials to support teachers. So they're part of a collective that wants to come together to solve the literacy challenges that we have in South Africa, to challenge individuals, to challenge the collective, to play a part. So Lucille, as a collective, how do you see this working out, this roadmap that we all need to come together in?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you see it working? How does this roadmap look?
Azania, I think our heart was to first bring different people into the room to discuss education. A lot of the time, as teachers or as educators, we sit in corners alone in silos mm. to discuss how to improve this education system. So the first idea or the first aim was to bring in people from different spheres and different sectors and different areas in education to come into one room and discuss the future for South Africa. And in that future, not just general education, but literacy, as that is the crisis right now.
Mm.
So that was the first aim. And then after getting those people in that room, we would like to form a movement, a coalition of different partners agreeing on a vision, on a mission that actually we need to achieve literacy in our lifetime. And on the day, we're having discussions on four different pillars or challenge issues that we'd like to bring to the table and have people's input on them. What are they doing right now? What would they like to see in the future? And what can they bring to the table, to this coalition, to work together. We're tired of working alone mm-hmm. in our small little spaces. We want to work with the communities. We want to work with teachers. We want to work with researchers. We want to work with people in civil society to help us. And those four areas are research, pre-service teaching and in-service teacher training and coaching, mm-hmm. literacy resources and materials, and then government and advocacy.
Right, right. Because we could all play a part, right? Especially in supporting, be it the teachers, the students, as a collective.
Yes,
we definitely can.
Yeah, sorry, Sven, yes, you were saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I think more and more when you look at talking about how education should be to suit the 21st century, you see a big emphasis on so-called soft skills, the ability to collaborate, the ability to problem solve, the ability to work across various fields, multidisciplinary work. And I think that that's something that in our own small organizing committee, we have modeled. We all come from different sides of literacy and of education. We have a person who started a school. We have Lucille who works in early materials development and teacher training. I myself am a teacher. We have Atta who's a teacher and now currently at university. And we believe on our own we can't do this, and only together we can do this. In my classroom I have a slogan which was come up with collaboratively by myself and the learners. Last year we had an art project and we decided to paint one wall in our classroom with a slogan, something that can represent us. And so we workshopped this process, because if there's something that's going to be permanently on the walls of our classroom, it better be something that we believe in. So we came up with different ideas, we voted on the different ideas, and then finally we came up with this idea of there were two different ideas: together we can, and we are limitless. Mm-hmm. So then somebody suggested, okay, let's join them together. Let's make together we are limitless. And then the problem was that those words were too long to fit on the classroom rules. So somebody suggested, let's use our languages, because we have a multilingual classroom. So now then we changed it to sonke si limitless. Mm-hmm. And then the Basutu were like, no, but we're not being represented. So we changed it sonke re limitless.
Yeah.
And that is, and something that I've taken forward also in my own life, in my work in education in general, not just in the classroom, that together we are limitless. We each have our own limitations. There's something I don't know. There's some area I don't have experience with. However, we fill each other's gaps. That's what we're coming together on Saturday yes, to say is yes. Together we are limitless. Together we can solve this issue.
Yes.
Definitely.
And in our lifetime, because the problem for so long has been on the blame, just to bring it back to where we started, blaming the education department for certain failures. Yes, it's not to absolve or to remove accountability and responsibility for certain issues like the norms and standards that we need to see in schools as far as infrastructure is concerned. We blame parents who simply don't have the capacity, because for so many it is about survival, the day to day. And then we also end up blaming the broader society for its failure to fill those gaps. So that's the shift that needs to happen,
yes.
To move from blaming to saying, what can we do?
Absolutely. And I think that's where maybe by saying the system, it sounded like I'm blaming the government. And that's not what we are. We want to work together with everybody. We don't believe in having camps and saying you guys are the problem. And you know, in the end, what really happens when you blame? The blame gets shifted, and where does it end up with? It ends up with a child at school, you know, who gets treated badly because they can't read and write. All of this stuff trickles down to the bottom and affects the children that have the least chances in our society. Mm. And so let's stop the blaming. Let's work together, and we can definitely solve this issue.
Right. And it starts by being part of this coalition, this movement around attaining literacy in our lifetime. So Lucille, if I want to participate, if I feel that I have something to add, to bring, that I've got the time, I've got the commitment and passion to start a reading club in Pimville, where I'm originally from, what do I do to be a part of the conversation?
Well, we're having the conversation the whole day on Saturday at Thabo Jabula Secondary School. We'll be starting at around 8 o'clock. And then we're going to have a plenary session with people discussing the issue. Because some people are not clear on what are the issues, what has been happening currently, how did we get here, basically. So we're going to have a first discussion to explain to people, how did we get here, what's happening, what's actually gone wrong. And then after that, we'll have a question and answer session. And then we'll go into our breakaway room after lunch to discuss the specific four areas that we've put on the table for the day where people can put their input and add value to what we'll be bringing.
So is there no need to register for participants? Registration or confirmation RSVP vibe?
That would be great if they do.
Where do we do that then?
We have our website, literacyinourlifetime.org.
Mm-hmm.
There they can find our email addresses and they can email us directly.
Literacyinourlifetime.org. Very noble indeed. I want to thank both of you. Very thought-provoking. I imagine the conversation is going to be very dynamic and robust. So even what comes out of it, hopefully it goes on to inform actual efforts on the ground that can transform communities. Thank you, Sven. Thank you, Lucille.
Thank you so much, Asenia.
Thank you.
So that was literacyinourlifetime.org.